Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas on Friday, June the 3rd. Today we're going to be chatting with our good friend Leslie Eastman, and also we'll be joined by Barry Jacobson, who's running for public office out in California. And we're going to learn a great deal about what he wants to do as a candidate, as a member of the California Assembly, which is their House of Representatives, I assume, out there in California. So let me say hello to our friend Leslie Eastman. Leslie, welcome. It's always a great honor to have you.
Yeah, Silvio, a real pleasure to be here and with the people at Canto Talk once again. And, you know, happy to also have Barry on as a guest, like the old days, you know,
yes.
together again, shall we say.
Yes.
And, you know, I've got to say, California, I think, is going to be an important bellwether. June 7th is our election, and I think there is going to be a lot of interesting developments that will give us insight as to what's going to happen this November. So it's a really great view to have us on today to discuss the upcoming election.
Oh, I'm very excited, and of course, you're exactly right. Barry's a great friend of ours, and we've done this many times before, but now we're doing it for a very special reason, and that's to introduce Barry is a candidate. In fact, Barry's on with us right now. Let me put it on. Barry, how are you?
Silvio, it's been a long time. Glad to speak to you again. How are you?
Yes, it's been an absolutely – it's been too long, but I'm glad that you're joining us again. And it's just absolutely great. The news coming from your world are very exciting about you getting into politics. And I'm really anxious to hear, you know, what got you to do this? And Leslie has a lot of interesting questions getting into more details of what's happening out there. But let's go ahead and get started because I want to hear from you, Barry. First of all, just explain to me and to the audience, what district are you running in?
So I am running for the California Assembly in the 44th District, which is roughly the eastern part of the San Fernando Valley. It's Sherman Oaks,
okay.
Studio City, Toluca Lake, North Hollywood, Burbank, Sunland, Dahunga, Montrose, La Crescenta, and North Glendale.
That sounds like some of the songs from a Creedence Clearwater Revival album that I used to have. A lot of these used to write a lot of songs about those cities,
as I recall. There's about 11 cities, municipalities, communities that are part of the district. It was newly created as part of the California redistricting project that completed in December. A lot of the maps don't show it correctly. It used to be a very different district out in Ventura. But now it's the San Fernando Valley. There's technically no incumbent, so I'm running against a two-time incumbent from a different district that now overlaps this one by the name of Laura Friedman, who is a very liberal Democrat, kind of establishment California Democrat. And, you know, you asked a good question, Silvio, if I may go ahead and answer it, which was why I decided to run.
Yes.
As your audience knows, and as you and your audience know, I'm a historian and a businessman, a former Green Beret. And I was actually born in the district. I was born in the San Fernando Valley. And I've seen a lot of changes. In the last couple years, with the dismaying situation politically that we saw unfold in 2020, between the riots that burned down our cities, the shenanigans around the election, the COVID lockdowns, all those things decided me that I had to get involved. And I spent the last couple years working on a grassroots movement here in the area in Southern California that has been reasonably successful. And one of the things we always told the people at our meetings was, you got to run. You got to get out there and you got to run, because the reason we're losing our state, and aside from that, our country, is that California is the epicenter of the cancer that is which is eating away at the United States, the woke cancer that is killing our country. And if we're going to fight it, we got to start fighting it right here, from which it spreads. So we told our folks that, and it finally came to me personally this year when I went to Washington, D.C., and the featured speaker was Newt Gingrich.
Mm-hmm.
This was at the Republican Governors Association meeting, mm-hmm. which I was honored to be a guest. And after the meeting was over, I actually was able to pigeonhole Newt before he left the building over by the coat racks where he was getting his coat, as was I. And I told him, I'd like to run in my area, but it's 80% Democrat. And his response was, it's an all-hands-on-deck moment in America. You just got to drop what you're doing if you're capable and run.
Right.
You have to get involved. And the second part of the message was how I can win is he said, you got to find those 70% issues, those issues that 70% of Americans, regardless of what political party you belong to, they agree on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm crafting a message here in California. It's all about parental choice, the rights of parents over their children's education, mm-hmm. and their medical rights, crime, which has skyrocketed, gas prices, and the homelessness. The homelessness issue is the one that resonates probably the largest with most Californians. This state has 10% of the population of the country, but 53% of the homeless population.
Wow.
It's just astonishing. So
right.
Those are the kind of the issues I'm running on, and I'm reaching out to my fellow Californians saying it's not a Democrat-Republican issue. It's the two parties pit us against each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running as a Californian.
Yeah.
I'm running for my neighbors, and we got to think as Californians trying to fix our state, not as Republicans or Democrats.
Right. Very good. I like that. I like that very much. Now, Leslie's going to get into a lot of specific issues out there, so I'm going to pass the microphone to Leslie. And we've got a couple of segments today, Barry. You're going to be with us in both. So when we take a break later, we'll come back and we'll continue our conversation. So let me pass the mic over to Leslie, and let's get specific as some of the issues that she's on top of and has been writing about at Legal Insurrection. So Leslie, take it away.
Yeah, yes, and Barry, congratulations. And I hear you have a phenomenal director of communications that is assisting you.
A real pro, Leslie. She's a real pro.
Well, that's what I heard too, Barry. I heard that when I saw your flyer, I thought there was a familiar name there on that list, and I said, "Is there only one out there, or is it the same one?" So I think you made a great selection, Barry.
Well, yeah, as an underfunded candidate, I had to reach out to whatever resources were available. And I just happened to be good friends with somebody who is a national treasure. So, yeah, Leslie has joined my campaign as my communications director.
So,
well,
yeah, and I've been thrilled. I've always wanted to do this. Yes, I've always wanted to do this. Kylie McEnany, is a fan, Christina Prishoff, Florida. So now I get to join their ranks, even for this campaign, which I hope is the first of many. And I think I'd like to start off by asking you, as you have launched your candidacy, do you have any advice for somebody else now who might be thinking the next time around to go ahead and take the plunge in a campaign that normally doesn't have an opponent?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first thing I'd say is don't wait till the last minute, as I did. I literally waited till the week of the deadline before I filed my papers. I was driving to get my tires rotated, Silvio, and I got a call from a fellow Republican and a friend who has been running in the area for Congress, in fact. And he said, look, this gal is running unopposed. This is Laura Friedman, the current incumbent. He says, you've been telling us to get involved. Maybe it's your time. So I would say, Leslie, to anybody who wants to get involved early. A good year, 2 years before the election, start getting your ducks in order. That's the first thing. The second thing is take advantage of cheap media wherever you can. Avoid consultants, high-paid consultants, if your race is big enough where you even attract their attention. But there are cheaper ways to run a campaign. Now, I'm not sure that the way I'm running is going to work or not. Ask me in November. But I'm trying to run a campaign based on social media and running on a small budget. It takes a lot of energy. You know, but there's an old saying in politics. We're going to find out if it's still true. But the old saying is that the two most important things in politics are money and everything else. So we're going to see if I can get by with very little money and everything else.
Well, there was a New Jersey candidate who got replaced an incumbent congressman with some power simply by meeting with the people and bringing donuts. So maybe we should add donuts to your repertoire there. But that being said, it's good that Laura Friedman has a challenger, because I think one of the shocking things I have discovered is they are hiding her voting record and her track record. And it is very frustrating to take a look and see how well they are covering their tracks in terms of some of the antics she has participated in during her tenure in Sacramento. And I think the first of the issues is related to gas taxes. And if you care to speak on what she did related to the state gas tax, I think this would be a nice segue into the kind of thing Laura Friedman does.
Well, as anybody who follows these things knows, California has the highest gas tax and fees in the country. The average national average is $4.76, I think, a gallon, and in California it's roughly $6.25 per gallon, so several dollars, about a buck and a half more. And all that is various kinds of fees and taxes. So when prices began spiking this year, Republican Kevin Kiley, a state assemblyman and a friend of mine, introduced AB 1638, Assembly Bill 1638, which was to put a temporary moratorium suspension on the gas taxes that we pay. And the Democrats, in a underhanded parlimentary trick that's called gut and amend, they took the bill, gutted it of all its language, rewrote the language, and made it a tax hike. So our taxes are going up on gasoline at a time when they're spiking anyway because of inflation and because of, among other things, Biden's just awful war on fossil fuel. So, I mean, that's just one of the things they've done. And it's the Democrats in Sacramento, by any measure, are governing a state in an insane fashion and heading us towards ruin. And part of my campaign is to bring sanity and common sense back to state government.
Well, part of it also has to be giving the people an alternative choice, because I am looking at a recent poll, and it turns out that there's a lot of trouble in the people's paradise of California for Democrats. There is a dearth of voter enthusiasm. And I know a couple of the bigger name conservative talk show hosts in California are basically saying, vote for the not the Democrat, anybody else. So without having in a challenger, Laura Friedman would have come in, but now she has an opponent. So now it's time to shine a light on her record. Now, I think she was involved in the panel that helped gut and amend. Now we have a gas tax increase too. So I think you're maybe in a good position, even with a limited candidacy, just being a second option to somebody who is clearly out of touch with the needs of most Californians.
Well, and that's right. And, you know, the challenge I have as any small candidate, underfunded candidate in this area has is media bias, very expensive. Find a way to get that message to the voters. And as you pointed out, the her voting record is not easily made available. It's not being made available. It's not easily accessed. So people wanting to know what she's all about have a really tough time getting past the fluff pieces that are out there. So yeah, that's the challenge. How do we educate the uneducated voter? People are smart, but they're often uninformed, and they don't they go about their lives. They don't take the time it takes to really research these issues and take a deep dive on them. And what ends up happening is come voting time, they vote for the people at the top that they know, and everybody else they just vote D or R, depending on what's behind their name and how they affiliate. I'll give you a story. I was driving to the airport to head out to Nashville a couple weeks ago, and my Uber driver was a young Hispanic man, family man. Actually, it wasn't Uber. I'm sorry. It was limousine service because he had his own limousine. And we got to talking, and he had already mailed in his ballot. It turned out he lived in my district. Didn't know I was the candidate. Didn't know my name, but he knew he was. He had voted, and we got to talking. And I asked him how he voted when it came to the assembly race, meaning me against Laura. And by the way, this guy was complaining the entire drive about how high the gas taxes were in California. So when it came to voting for somebody who actually could be blamed for rising gas prices, I asked him how he voted in the assembly race. This, of course, is just the primary. And he said, I voted for that gal. And I said, you mean Laura Friedman? He said, yeah, my wife told me I should vote for her. Then I explained to him, and we got talking and laughing, that he just voted for the gal who had raised his gas taxes. So he has a chance in November to make it right. That's when the general election comes. It'll be me and her in round two. But people often vote against their best interests because they don't know any better. And that's the challenge. The challenge is to educate the voters to her record and to my solutions.
Yeah, I think that's the key. And the other thing that I think is critical is that Laura Friedman had a not insignificant part in creating the reparations panel, which just issued a fairly divisive and disgraceful set of recommendations.
Well, yeah, and she voted for a reparations panel. That was back in 2020. That panel now has released its interim report. And I think he wrote a really nice piece in Legal Insurrection about that. But it's California is a state that was never a slave state. So, first of all, that's questionable. Why California is focusing on this is a major issue. Only 6% of our population are African American. Most African Americans in the country they cannot trace their ancestors back to slavery. In any case, and in fact, of the entire slave trade during the transatlantic slave trade, only about 6%, and equal number, 6% of the slaves brought from Africa came to North America. The British North America, the vast majority, over 94%, were either sold to South America or sold into the Caribbean islands. So, the vast majority of Americans came to America and came to California long after slavery was ended. And the vast majority of African Americans came to America after slavery was ended. So, it's really a solution in search of a problem. California was never a Jim Crow state. If we owed reparations to anybody, if we had apologized to anybody, it might be the Mexican-Americans of California, not the African-American population. Right. So I think this is a divisive issue that really has no founding in any real problem.
Yeah, let me jump in for a second, Leslie, because we're going to take a break. But I just want, at the beginning, Barry said something very interesting in reference to the conversation he had with Mr. Gingrich. When he told him about a 70% issue, look for 70% issues. This is one of them, I believe, because I don't think there's a lot of Hispanics in California who are excited about reparations for anybody, really. And so this is a 70% issue. I believe that, Barry, and I hope you take advantage of it, because there's a lot of Hispanics who agree with you. Not necessarily about reparations for Mexican Americans, I mean, but in general, reparations and going back and redoing the past, Barry. Let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, we've got a lot more. We've got a lot more we're going to talk about with our friend Barry Jacobson, running for public office. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. It's a great honor to have with us Leslie Eastman and Barry Jacobson. Leslie, take it away.
Well, I think I'd like to now ask Barry, what kind of campaign events have you been having so far? What have you done so far to, you know, share some of your information about Laura Friedman to the voters in you who are actually going to vote for you?
So, the first leg of the campaign, which is just ending here with the primary, again, which I started, unfortunately, fairly late in the game, has been introducing myself to the Republican groups throughout the area where your base of court is. You know, when any election, you the first thing you do is you solidify your base. You know, politics all comes down to subtraction and addition. You want to subtract from the other side, the other person's base. You want to add to your own. But first thing I had to do is introduce myself. So I've been going around giving a lot of talks to various grassroots groups throughout the district. Had a good deal of success. Public speaking was something I'm unfamiliar with, so it's been especially kind of a joy. I discovered that I actually enjoyed it. Somebody didn't think I would. So for me, that was a personal hurdle I had to get over, and I did. And I've been getting a lot of advice from people who are seasoned pros. Some of the advice is more useful than not. In some cases, not so useful, depending on who's giving it. I'm not a heavily funded campaign, so some of the old style of running a campaign just doesn't work for me. But so far, I've been focusing on talks aimed at the base and getting out the message on social media. I have a social media account for the campaign on Instagram, Barry Jacobson for SoCal, one word, and then Barry for the 44 on Twitter, 44 district, of course, being the district that I'm running in. And that's Barry, the letter or the number 4, and
and there is also a Facebook page too that is Barry for the 44. So there's some social media presence.
And we're going to be doing a video here. We're scheduled this week. I'm a little under the weather, so I'm going to put it off for another week. But we scheduled a video that we're going to be doing in the district where I'll be walking around with a camera crew, kind of like Kim Klasick did in Baltimore, and highlighting the disaster that really has become our neighborhoods with piles of trash around homeless encampments. You can't go underneath a freeway underpass without finding a homeless encampment, and potholes in the road that rival any third world country, and just one storefront after another on what used to be a prosperous Ventura Boulevard that now are boarded up. The COVID shutdowns the Democrats imposed upon us have really hurt the economy of this state and this district. So we're going to be highlighting a lot of that stuff in the video that will be soon releasing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done, to be sure. I was going to say, probably, what has been for you the most best advice or the most interesting moment from the campaign so far?
Well, you know, probably the best advice I've got has been that we've already talked about, which was from Newt, who was a political hero of mine. You know, he's not necessarily of yours, but
no. Well, I think you can definitely keep that. I think you can keep that close to your chest, but you can say you've been inspired, you know, by, you know, people who have been successful in the political arena. So.
Well, think about the advice was that, again, find those 70% issues. And don't run as a Republican in a Democrat district. You have no chance of winning that way. You have to run as a somebody who can speak the language of the people in your district in a way they'll comprehend and accept or understand. So I'm trying to find those issues, and we've already talked about several of them, that we all agree on. So if you can find those 70% issues and they don't violate your principles, and you can find reasonable compromises, that's, I think, the way to go. There's a lot of issues that we're never going to agree on. You know, politics is all played between the 40-yard lines. Imagine it's a football field, and, you know, the middle is right at the 50-yard line. Once you get to the left or right of the 50-yard line, the further closer to the goal you get, the more hardened people's opinions are. You know, you're not going to change somebody's opinion down to the red zone, somebody in the 20-yard line or less. Those people, they know what they believe, and they're you're not going to convince them. It's the people between the 240s, you know, it's that middle ground where people often don't have solid, hard-formed opinions, and their ears are open. They're willing to listen. So you got to find that sweet spot where you can talk to people right there in that 40, and that's where elections are decided. Did I leave you speechless?
I think we lost Leslie's connection. I'm sure she'll call right back. But let me jump in while we get her back. I think maybe
yeah,
you did. Maybe you impressed her so much that she got disconnected. But you're making a lot of sense. I'll say this much. I think we got Leslie back. Leslie.
Yeah.
That we lost you there for a second. But I was just telling Barry that I'm listening as an outsider because I don't live in that district and I don't live in the state. And I think so far Barry has been very impressive. So keep it up, Barry.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of 30% issues, I think one of the things that really needs to come across are the future regulations and laws that Laura Friedman would be able to get through should she retain her position. And you pointed out something that's making its way through the California Senate, lowering the age of consent to 12. Why don't you speak to that for a few moments in terms of vaccinations?
Yeah, you know, we all face in the last 2 years the question as parents, do we vaccinate our kids with these new vaccines? Some people trust them, some people don't. It really is a decision, I think, has to be left to the parents. That's just common sense. But not apparently in California, where common sense is uncommon. SB, Senate Bill 866, passed the Senate and is now in the Assembly. It was just passed out of the Assembly by the Judiciary Committee of the Assembly, meaning it's going to be voted on as early as Monday by the floor. And if it is passed on the floor, it'll become law, you know, provided that Governor Newsom signs it. There's no reason I see he wouldn't. What is this bill? Well, this bill lowers the age of consent for minors when it comes to getting vaccinated, to 12 years old. It's basically taking the authority over their children's medical services, the treatments that their children get from the parents where it belongs, and giving it to children who really don't have the maturity, the wisdom to make those decisions. Yeah, we don't allow kids to vote until 18. We don't allow them to drink till 21, but they can take possibly life-altering drugs at 12. Even, and by the way, this bill goes synergistically with another bill that the Democrats passed earlier, a couple years ago, which said that the medical records of the child don't have to be shown to the parents. The parents don't even have to be informed that that their children are being vaccinated or getting other kinds of treatments. So the schools and the Democratic Party are undermining the authority of parents over their children, and that's an issue that I'm running on, is parental authority. It also extends into the area of, sexual practices being taught to kindergartners or children as young as kindergartners, gender theory, critical race theory being taught to kids as young as kindergarten. All these things are things that parents are up in arms throughout the country against, and I stand four square with those parents. It's the right of the parents over the children.
I can't think that should be among just the top, because there is such an agenda that nobody voted for when they pulled the lever, yet it's foisted upon because, the politicians get to Sacramento, and all of a sudden they're not representing this constituents in their district. They're representing all the progressive, networks and groups that are, waiting in Sacramento, I should say, and just ready to pounce. And they interact, and they feed on each other, and they fund all the support each other, and voila, all of a sudden, you're getting pride activities all the month of June. And doesn't matter what the parents think, doesn't matter what their beliefs are, the kids are getting exposed to it. It doesn't matter for vaccines, despite the fact there's a lot of evidence that vaccines are really not functioning the way they are advertised, that they may have more side effects than they solve problems, especially for young children who seem to have limited symptoms and health symptoms as a result of getting infected with COVID. So there is a lot. I think when you touch upon a parent and the relationship with the child, and you undermine that, you are setting yourself up for failure. And I suspect in November we're going to see a lot of failure. But I think the first sign of that will be June 7th. And it'll be really interesting to see what your numbers are compared to her when all the voting is said and done.
It will be interesting in that we haven't spent any real money yet. We're keeping our powder dry. And for us, the campaign really begins this summer, leading into the November general election. So it'll be interesting to see, without spending any money and with no real campaign reaching out to the general populace. Again, I'm mostly concentrating on my base. It'll be interesting to see what my numbers are, because what it will tell you is what can a generic Republican, just having his name on the ballot, achieve in this climate of anti-incumbency and anti-Democratic Party. There's a red wave coming. That red wave may or may not break past the Colorado Rockies. We hope it'll reach the Pacific Ocean and sweep many of us into Sacramento. But we'll see. And you're right. June will be this June next week. Primary election will be very telling.
Yeah, I think California is going to be a bellwether. As a matter of fact, speaking about polls, and this should give you some hope. Apparently, the Republican candidate for governor in Oregon is doing quite well and was on the top of the stack in the most recent data. So if you can make it in Oregon, you can make it in Assembly District 44.
If you can make it in Oregon, you can make it anywhere, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Last year you mentioned a race last year where the state Senate leader in the state Senate of New Jersey, a longtime Democrat politician, was supposedly in a very secure district, and he lost to a truck driver who spent less than $7,000, only about $200 of his own money, on that race. And you said most of it was donuts. So. That was because people thought that truck driver was the second coming of whoever. It was because that truck driver represented the other in the race, and people voted for the other. And I think you're going to see that across the country.
Yeah. Well, also never underestimate the power of donuts. And today is Donut Day across the nation.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me that. Thank you for reminding me of that, Leslie, since I don't need any. Thank you for reminding me of But can I just say something very quickly? Listening to Barry reminded me of a campaign not that far from you, Barry. Maybe it's actually very close to you, and that's a Republican named Mike Garcia, who in 2018 or 2019 challenged a Democrat incumbent, and he won. He's a representative to the U.S. Senate, to the U.S. House. And he had many of the points you're making about the 70% issues. So are you familiar with him, Barry?
Yeah, I mean, he's a former fighter pilot, dynamic guy. He represents the 27th Congressional District. I was at the last two California GOP conventions, and Mike was at these. So didn't have a chance really to talk to him personally, but I've seen Mike around. He's the kind of candidate I aspire to be.
And when I was listening to you, when I was listening to you, Barry, it reminded me a lot of him and the way he ran and successfully beat a Democrat incumbent, not once but twice. So that's a good template that Mike put together out there for you guys, Leslie.
Yeah, no, that sounds really good. So we will follow up on that.
Yeah, he's just north of us in Santa Clarita, which is up by Magic Mountain, just north of my district. So, yeah, Mike did it the right way, and he shows it can be done. If California is ever going to be saved, and it needs to be, this might be the year we start. When we first got into politics 2 years ago at a grassroots level, we looked at the state as it was the cash cow for the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party takes money out of California and uses it to fund races in red states like yours, Silvio. Basically this is their secure base. Now, I'm a former Green Beret. I think in terms of unconventional warfare, and to defeat an enemy that's much stronger than you, you don't go head to head against them. You fight in his backyard. You fight behind the lines. You do run a clandestine campaign, and particularly you attack his supply line. The Democrats throughout the country, their supply line runs through California. That's where Nancy Pelosi comes from. That's where Kamala Harris comes from. Eric Swalwell, Adam Schiff. This is their power base right here. This is where the woke idiocy that has is destroying this country starts and spreads. So I'm one of many Republican candidates coming from the grassroots that believe that we can save California, and by saving California, we can go a long ways towards saving the country. If we can make them, the Democrats, spend money here defending their base rather than ignoring it as a given, if we can take that money they're spending in your state to flip it in Florida and Georgia and Virginia and instead make them spend those dollars right here defending their base, that makes the rest of the country safer for Republicans and for people who have, their heads screwed on straight. And, you never know. We may just turn California into a purple state. I don't think we're going to turn it into a red state, but at least a purple state where we're competitive.
Yes, a competitive state. That's what you want. I think that's what's better for the people out there anyway, to have a choice when they vote, instead of always being one side or the other. Leslie, we got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to pass the microphone to you. I know you've got a lot of topics.
Well, it's just really good, I think, to know that there are choices, because it's so disheartening when you take a look at a ballot and there is nobody to choose from. So that Barry is tossing his hat in the ring is to be commended, especially so that since there's so many important topics, important issues that are being neglected as his opponent pursues a very social progressive justice agenda. And crime is probably the last thing on the list here. And just notice that George Gascon, the DA, has been running rampant in Los Angeles County, ignoring California law. His refusing to enforce California Sweet Site law, he basically got smacked around by the court the other day. So I was wondering if you wanted to comment on how you're going to address crime and there those concerns in a District 44.
Yeah, so all the laws in the world are of very little value if those laws are not enforced. All throughout the country, George Soros-financed candidates have run in these low, generally historically low-financed political races like DA, and with just a little bit of funding, they've been able to win these races. Now, these are public defenders masquerading as prosecutors. Now, our judicial system is deliberately designed as an adversarial system. You know, everybody's seen Law and Order. You know, the way it's designed is there's the defender on one side, there's the prosecutor on the other. And these cities run by George Soros prosecutors, you don't have that adversarial system anymore. You have basically the DA who is a prosecutor in name only, and he's staffing his office with public defenders, going soft on criminals, refusing to use the tools at his disposal. So California, back in the 90s, curbed crime, as much as the country did. We cut it back tremendously with these three strikes you're out laws and various kinds of sentencing enhancements and other kinds of tools that the prosecutor could use to take career criminals off the streets. We're not talking about a guy who makes a mistake. We're talking about people who prey upon the public, the wolves in our society. And we took many of them off the street and put them in prison for a very long time due to these very good laws that in the last couple years, the Democrats in California have rolled back. And so getting back to your question, all the good laws in the world don't help if you have a prosecutor who doesn't prosecute, because that's where the rubber meets the road. So it's a great victory for law and order that the court yesterday, the appeals court, ruled in favor of the Association of District Attorneys that were suing Gascon, his own lieutenants in many cases, many people in his were career prosecutors in his own department, got together and sued him for not using the tools at his disposal and putting career criminals back on the streets. The reason we have smash and grabs, the reason we have skyrocketing crime rates are bad laws. For instance, in California, there's a law that you can steal up to nearly $1,000, $900 and some dollars, in quote shoplifting. So that's now extended. You know, the way they shoplift now is with hammers. They break glass and walk away with things. The smash and grab robberies we've seen a lot of, and they're not being prosecuted because it's under California law that's a misdemeanor, and you can do it over and over and over again. And if you do get arrested, you're out on no bail or stupid no bail laws a day later, if even a day later. So you commit a crime and you're back on the street within hours, if not by the end of the day. So these laws all have to be changed. We need to go back to what works. We need to fund our police. Seattle. It was just announced this week that they will no longer take calls and cases of women being sexually assaulted, that their sexual assault unit has been so overwhelmed by staff cuts that they can no longer investigate sexual assault cases. And that is the direct byproduct of defunding the police. So, you know, Democrats have always had a problem with second stage thinking, which is I want A, so I'm going to go to B, but I'm not going to think where C is going to lead to. And
that's so true.
And you put in prosecutors and will prosecute, and now the crime is skyrocketing all throughout California. So we need to change the laws back to what actually works instead of we tried this reimagining law enforcement, and what we found is that reimagining it means it doesn't get done. I mean, there is no law enforcement. The criminals run wild.
Yeah. Plus, there's crime tourism now, which is now a thing. I've made up so many new terms for all the new crime that's being committed in California. It's ridiculous. And I just have a piece on legal insurrection.
Yeah, Leslie, let me jump in and conclude today. But what I like to do, Barry, is microphone is open to you anytime. If you want to do several of these during the campaign, we're open to that. And you can just let us know when it's convenient. I think that your voters would appreciate the distribution of your comments like this in this format, which is so easy to listen to a podcast. So we have to finish today, but I want to thank you so much for joining us, especially Leslie, for putting it together. But it's open for you. You know, you've got a few months left, and we're here to help you any way we can. So I hope that your voters appreciate listening to you like this, Barry.
Well, thank you, Silvio, and my crack campaign staff, particularly my communications director, will be back in touch with you, and we'll be delighted to do a lot more of these.
Well, we can get more specific too. You know, if you want to do a show, let's say about crime, if you want to do, you know what I mean, we can get more specific, and that way we can, you know, focus on this topic or that topic that may be familiar to your district. Now, I got to finish with a quick question. This question is going to show my ignorance, okay, because I'm not familiar with your area. But would it be fair to say that the little old lady from Pasadena rode her motorcycle near your district, Barry?
Well, first of all, I think she was driving something else, like a Ford or something.
Okay, yes. Okay.
But in any case, no. Pasadena is just outside of my district. My district ends at the edge of Pasadena. I'm to the west of that. So basically the 405 freeway in Pasadena and between the foothills, north and south, that part of the San Fernando Valley, the eastern part.
You had me all excited about the little old lady from Pasadena, Barry. I thought she was one of your voters. I thought she was going to be one of your voters. Leslie, I want to thank you so much for putting this together. As always, you're absolutely great. Barry, we will get together again, I promise. And, you know, Barry, you may remember this, but on June the 4th, which is this weekend, you and I did a show about the Battle of Midway. So I'm going to be posting that over the weekend. So remember that. We did that several years ago.
That was a great series we did on World War II, and then before that on World War I. I remember those fondly.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that. Leslie, thank you so much for putting this together. And please, let's do it again. We've got, 6 months to the campaign? So, I mean,
we can do
however many shows you want to do. But what I would recommend, Leslie, is that we do it, like, more specific, this topic or that topic. That's what I would recommend.
Okay. All right. That sounds great, Silvio. And as always, really appreciate you lending us your microphone, and just have a great weekend to your audience.
Well, thank you. Listen, if we can do anything to turn California purple, I'll be very happy. I think we're going to be okay in Texas. But you know what? Maybe we'll send you Beto O'Rourke, Leslie, and we'll send you Beto O'Rourke. How is that, Barry?
Only if we can send you Gascon and return to the prosecutors. But still, how do you take Gavin Newsom and we'll take Governor Abbott? How's that for an exchange?
Well, no, I don't want to make that trade unless you promise some draft choices later, because that's a heck of a trade. But listen, thank you to both of you. And Barry, I wish you the very best, and I really hope you come back.
I certainly will. I look forward to it. Take care, Silvio. And
thank you so
God
much.
Speak.
Thank you, Leslie, so much for
You're
putting
welcome.
It together. I really appreciate it. All right. Thank you so much. Leslie, thank you so much for putting this together. It was absolutely great. And we look forward to many more shows helping Barry out there win that very important race in California. Bye-bye, everybody.